So we just released an episode on Chile's new constitutional referendum, and it made me think about constitutions. Why do we need them, and what purpose do they serve? It's kind of funny, because most democracies have a constitution, with the exception of, I think, Israel, New Zealand, and England. But guess what, guy? Zimbabwe has a constitution. Turkey has a constitution, right? China has one. Yemen has one. So having a constitution is not necessarily credible to be in a democracy. So my question to you is, what is a constitution and why do we need them?
So why do we need them is a separate question. What are they is they're a set of understandings, guidelines about, or explanations about how this thing, this organization is run. Who wields power, who's responsible for what, when, etc. Now, I want to clarify, when you say Saudi Arabia has a constitution and England does not have a constitution, what you're really saying is that Saudi Arabia has a written constitution and England has an unwritten, does not have a written constitution.
They go by tradition.
Yeah. So I want to clarify, every country has a constitution in the sense that every country has a set of understandings of how this country is run, who wields power, et cetera, et cetera.
What are the rules of the game?
What are the rules of the game? And in this respect, every organization, your church, your family, your company, they all have a constitution in the sense that there's an understanding within the organization of who has authority, who wields what powers, etc. And just a tangible example in your family, some families have this understanding, even though it's not written down in a written constitution, that the breadwinner also decides on how to spend the money, the family's money. Other families have a different constitution that says that no, the person, the wife, she runs the household economy, even though the husband brings
or the husband in. In my case.
Yeah. And again, and your children, they grow up in a house and they know that dad is in charge of this and mom is in charge of that, even though there's no written document.
Okay, so why write down? Why do countries need to write down their constitution for their set of guiding principles?
Right. So on that, I reluctantly agree with the question in the sense that it's not as useful. The written document, the words are not really determinative of how life is lived within this country or in this organization. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg, this famous jurist, the justice of the Supreme Court, once said in an interview that the words on a piece of paper of the Constitution do not determine the way life, civic life, is run in a country. What really matters, what really gives force to the words written in the Constitution, are the sentiments and legal and moral beliefs of the people. And therefore, Israel can be a democracy, even though it doesn't have a written constitution that says it's a democracy. And the U.S. can be a democracy with it. And Saudi Arabia is Saudi Arabia, not because of what it says in the Constitution of Saudi Arabia, but because of the sentiments of the people of Saudi Arabia.
But we see in so many parts of the world right now, there is a whole argument about, judicial activism. And there is really a spectrum of understandings about these guiding set of principles, right? From those who say, the Constitution is what is written in the document, or those who say those are just words that can be interpreted over time.
Yes, look, the interpretation issue is a sincere disagreement about how to read a document. So I in any historical document, in any document written in the past, before last week, can be interpreted by different methods. Okay, so you can try to read into the mind of the author and say, okay, that's what this document means. Or you can have a more
Orthodox?
So that's the orthodox or the traditional way of reading a document from the past. A different understanding is to say that, look, the meaning of a text evolves over time, and so it can mean today not what the author meant, but something else. Okay, so that's that really is an interpretive method. So, but that's not the question of what a constitution does, and if Ruth Bader Ginsburg is correct, the words on the document is not what gives force to the Constitution. Then the question is, what do you get by writing it down? So, like for example, if I said earlier that your family has a constitution, what would get you to change your family from a family that doesn't have a written document, a piece of paper on the fridge that says who does what? What would make you want to write it down?
But we see this all around. I mean, in the United States, within the states, and all around the world, like the example of Chile, who's just drafting a new constitution now after the Pinochet constitution, right? For obvious reasons. We see that this is an argument in all around the world that is reflecting, you know, political realities on the ground. People want to write down the constitution and change it. And this brings the question of, if a constitution is something that could be amended every decade or two based on changes in social political beliefs
and the sentiments of the people.
Exactly. So why do we need constitutions? And then how is the United States constitution so different than other countries?
Right. So, I'd say, let me start with the last one about the U.S. Constitution is very difficult to amend, to change. Okay? And that gives it a certain kind of character and maybe authority. But in Chile or in our state constitutions, which are relatively easy to amend, you're right. Every election can bring a change to the Constitution, which means, to your original question, you don't really need a constitution to govern if you can simply change it democratically, like passing a normal law. Mm-hmm. Okay? So it suggests, going back to what Ginsburg was saying, that the purpose of the constitution is not so much to dictate how we are going to live, because you can do that with a normal law, but rather it's public relations, or it's an educational tool, inward and outward.
But it's a educational tool or guiding tool for legislators, right? For those who make the rules. I mean, and that's especially in the United States, I would argue. If it's not only intended for lawmakers, who else is it intended for? Who is it supposed to guide?
So it's a guiding, not so much for the lawmakers, because, you know, they just passed the law or the Constitution. It's a guide to three groups. Mm-hmm. One is the courts. Okay, sure. So it gives the courts a legal basis to make various rulings according to the understandings of the entire society about how we run this place. So again, guidance to the courts is one. The second is, again, an educational guidance, an education in civics to the people of the country. Okay, this is the kind of country we are. So if you have a constitution like you had with your episode on Chile, our government is responsible for this, this, and this. By laying it down in a constitution, now you send the message to the citizens, we live in this kind of country that values this and this and this. And the third audience is a diplomatic audience. It sends a message to the world about what kind of country we are, which again is, for example, Turkey. There's a big thing with the EU, whether Turkey will amend its constitution or its governance system to
fit the values of the EU and their constitution.
Exactly. So the question is, does Turkey want to signal to the EU that we're your kind of country, or does it want to signal to the Islamic world, no, we're our kind of country?
Well, so this really brings the dichotomy here. On one hand, we have the constitution as a nation building tool, right? Mm-hmm. That allows a government to articulate the values of the people. Here's who we are and what we stand for, right? And on the other hand, you're saying, in effect, it's almost a tool of nation branding, right? Where we explain to the audiences, in other words, in other countries, this is who we are as a nation, and here's what we stand for.
Branding to other countries and to our own citizens.
Internal and external audiences.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is really interesting. Yeah. So ultimately, right, we see this argument about the constitution. We see it in politics everywhere. We see it in the EU. We see it in more traditional societies, where, don't forget, in more traditional societies, they don't really need a constitution, because this constitution is religion, right? I mean, so think about many nations in the Islamic world, where you have Sharia as the guiding set of principles, right? We see this in many countries. In Africa, we see it in many countries in the Middle East, and then we see many countries in the so-called liberal democracy world, right? In the Western world, where a universal set of principles, right, almost over supersedes the nation's specific constitution. We see this in the EU to an extent.
Yeah, but look, you see in much of the Islamic world that they do have constitutions, okay? And in some of them, the constitution clarifies that, hey, Islamic law is Islamic law, and secular law and the national law is separate. In others, the state constitution says the opposite. Islamic law is the law of the land. So they still want the constitution to send a message to their people and to other peoples about what kind of country this is, and how Islamic is it. And I'd say the constitutions have exploded exactly in this democratic era, in the 19th and 20th century. Basically, except for the United States, all the constitutions in the world have been written in the latter half of the 19th century, a trickle, and then explosion in the 20th century. And so it
coincides with the creation of about 60 new countries in the post-colonial era, right? All these new countries in Africa and the Middle East and South Asia, right? That now had to articulate not only what is their name and what is their flag, but what are their values and how do they want to be understood?
Right. And so I think in this era, whether you live in a democracy or in a non-democracy or an anti-democracy, the people have a lot of power over their governments. Okay? Again, even in places like Saudi Arabia and China, a lot of the governments have reason to, they're influenced by their public. And so if there's this contention about what kind of country are we, what does the government owe the people, what do the people owe the government, now there's disagreement, and therefore there's this impulse, okay, let's write this down, just like with your family. If all of a sudden you and your wife disagree about how to spend money, how to raise the kids, then you might want to sit down and say, okay, let's agree now on a set of principles, write them down, so that if we have an argument in a week or in a year, we can go back to this and say, already written, we already agreed. So I think it's this explosion of constitutions is a reflection of power of the people in the modern era, whether in democracies or not.
Okay, so to sum up, constitutions provide a set of guiding principle, legal and national, that answers not only questions about how should rules be legislated or how courts should interpret law, but also answer the question, who we are as a people, what do we stand for, and what values are most important?
The fact that a constitution is, the fact that it's hard to change a constitution has a role in establishing an element of stability over time. Going back, for example, to your family or your church, if you write it down, that anchors the agreement that we have today moving into the future. So again, in the 19th, 20th century, the age of nationalism, the age of democracy, the age of the Industrial Revolution, it's a very unstable society. And therefore, having something written down means that there's an element of stability. It's kind of an anti or undemocratic element in governing a society. And that it says that the next generation will be governed by the understandings of the previous generation. So it just kind of stabilizes things. And the more difficult it is to change the Constitution, the more stable it is. And maybe that's the secret of success of the U.S. Constitution compared to the Chile Constitution or the California Constitution, which are very easy to amend.
We shall see. Until next time, Guy and Guy, thank you so much for tuning in.